You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
So, what are you guys going to do? You going to continue to be a bunch of soft, underperforming, tattooed millionaires?
They said all along, we're not, the perfection is not possible. We just want to get the big decisions right.
What are we doing? What are we doing?
Green room getting hot.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
The right answer was a goal in Times Square so we could do butts up, but that was an easy one.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. In the green room, Andrew Wiebe, Bobby Warshaw, Kalen Carr, here for the long run. Argentina crying on the pitch somewhere, somehow. It's been a terrible, terrible tournament for them, and there's already some teams out. We'll talk about them. The World Cup, MLS's participation, of course, pro has been in the spotlight as well. But guys, this is a new mix. As manager, I like to test and see what sort of talents I have. You know, relationships on the field are so important. Combination play only comes with reps. How do you feel you'll both perform here?
I mean, I feel confident in my performance. I can only focus on what I can control on the pitch.
Gotcha.
But I am having a little bit of an issue playing with a Stanford guy and an FC Dallas player, just as far as chemistry goes, you know? Will we really vibe? If my man beats me, is he going to cover me? I'm not quite sure. I have to check my shoulder.
Yeah, I'm in this one for myself. Man, I'm going to make sure we win so I get the call next ETR.
Okay. All right. Well, competition is good. It breeds the best in everyone. Timothy Way, I found that out. Playing pickup soccer in New York City. We're going to get to the Open Cup. We're going to get to Major League Soccer. We're going to go the storylines for every single team because we're basically at the halfway point here. I know it's been 2 weeks. We've been focused on the World Cup. I just as much as you, have had a good palate cleansing from these week and a half, 2 weeks. Sometimes you just need a break from what you're obsessed with. Certainly Major League Soccer is that for us. But we'll go through all 23 teams. And, of course, we've got some good stuff in the mailbag as well. But Timothy Weah playing pickup in New York City. You guys have a playoff game tonight. Is that right?
Yep.
Bowery Premier League?
Yep.
Tonight? So who are you calling up? What U.S. national team is taking the field for you guys? Who's the?
Tim would be one of the first people to call. I was emceeing the Steve Nash showdown yesterday.
Kalen crushed it.
Bobby came through. Yep. Yeah. Oh, you know, Steve hit me up.
Yeah, very casually. First 5 minutes of the show while I was.
I told you I'm coming to play.
Yeah,
man.
I know. There you go.
But, yeah, Weston McKinney was out there. And Tim.
The octopus.
Yeah, the two of them, though, were on the same team. And seeing the two of them in that setting in Chinatown, just having fun, like showing out, they brought it. And it made me so excited. You know, obviously, the World Cup is happening. We've missed out. But it made me pretty excited to look at the future. And then you had Tyler Adams on the sideline, kind of ribbing them, giving them.
Yucking it up.
Yeah, just giving them a little bit of mess to be able to, you know, step their game up. But it was fun.
Who was the guy who's not a soccer player? Because I've gone to this for years. I wasn't able to make it last night, unfortunately. Who's the guy who was not a soccer player who still impressed you? There's always that one guy where you're like, oh, wow, he can actually ball.
Steve Nash was definitely the best non-soccer player. TJ McConnell was actually pretty good, but I'm also biased as a Sixers fan.
Philly, yeah. He got megged, like, disgusting.
By John O'Brien.
John O'Brien.
By the God.
The God, yeah. No, I actually
just
legend.
Put him on his back?
Oh, it's on my Twitter. I just tweeted it. It's disgusting. It was so to see him and Weston McKinney, and then you add in Joel Embiid showed up. He was just larger than life. Trust the process,
that's
Bobby.
That's right. Let's go.
Bobby, did you do everything you could to get in proximity? Were you, like, inching closer?
Yeah.
You're, like, trying to fight. You're like, Kalen, what's up, man? Like, getting that quick dab just so you can circle back around.
That's
right
exactly
by Joel.
Right. And I also fanboyed so hard on John O'Brien after he was walking off the field, and I tapped him on the shoulder. I was like, John, I want you to know that when you were on the World Cup team, I was the little boy who watched you and wanted to play soccer because of you.
700 words coming soon.
Boom. Probably more like 1,600.
That's how I do it. That's how
but
I do
seriously,
it.
Seriously, if you're going to call somebody up for your men's league team from the U.S. national team, who's it going to be? I'm talking strictly competitive basis.
Honestly, Weston McKinney. He really impressed me yesterday. I mean, the flash of Timothy Weah, he's got maybe the quicker feet, but I was talking to Kyle Martino and some of the guys afterwards at the pub, and sorry, another
it's
name
okay.
drop.
It's
that's
okay.
Bad.
It's okay.
Okay.
Continue. My chuckle is more jealousy than
I wasn't
else.
Playing, mind you. Okay,
right,
I was
right.
just hyping everybody up. But to see him up close. I haven't been able to watch him a ton, of course, but he's got some maturity to his game and a physicality to the skill. You can give him the ball in kind of any situation.
Yeah. That's why he's one of the ones on my list, and I'm making this realistic so I don't have to run. You bring Weston okay. McKennie and Tyler Adams. I don't run. I'll sit in the back. I'll chat. But, hey, you got some cover left flank. Track that runner. Good job.
Brooke Hatton.
Atta baby boys. I'm off the Brooke Hatton tip, but I'd come back for them. Also, I think an underrated one, Graham Zusi, because nobody's going to know you have a World Cup participant on your team. They're going to be like, oh, that guy's from Bushwick? Cool, right? Yeah, what's his name? Yeah, wow. I think he works at my coffee shop. Like, I swear to God, I bought an Americano from the other day.
Can I just say one other thing? This is really not related, but that's what the joy of coming on ETR is about. I was hanging out at a coffee shop in Brooklyn recently in Williamsburg.
This did come full circle. Wow.
And the barista was like, hey, I know you work at MLS. I got to ask you, what's Matt Doyle like in person? What's he like in real life?
What?
And this has happened to me. I can't even tell you. I've been in Portland at a bar last year. Now in Williamsburg, only in the most hipster places, they want to know about Matt Doyle, the armchair analyst. Is he as much of a genius as he is in writing, in person?
His head's big enough. I'm not sure. Can I just throw out there that his mystique is his brand?
It's working.
That's what he's going for here. I'm also going to throw out Wando, because all men's league goals are about like three things, which is timing, loose balls, and positioning. And so Wando he's money from all those spots.
I respect that.
Yep. All right, let's talk about the World Cup here. People actually playing world-class soccer at this time of year. Out already, Egypt, sorry, Omar Gaber. Saudi Arabia, Morocco, and Peru. Yoshi Yotun out. Peru, one of the best stories of the tournament. It just didn't happen for them. They could not find the goals. Missed from the PK spot. Didn't get it done today against France. So now we're wondering about the fate of Panama, Costa Rica, and Mexico. Saturday, Costa Rica, Brazil, Mexico, South Korea. Panama and England is on Sunday. Panama, of course, big losers in their first game. Costa Rica lost, didn't really create. Mexico, we all know about the choo-choo train that is Mexico, coming through, paying you dollars on the advertising front and capturing America's heart. Mexico is the obvious one to go far here. Do Costa Rica or Panama, either of them have a chance to get through? MLS contingents, they're big ones, the two biggest. Are we going to have disappointment for them, or are we going to have happiness for their club teams when they come back early?
Costa Rica's got a chance. I wouldn't bet against them right now. I mean, it's not easy task going up against Brazil, but Brazil looked a bit vulnerable. Didn't really have that killer instinct in the first match, so I think it'll hinge on trying to get a result out of that one. No easy task, but hey, you got Keylor Navas and some talented guys going forward. They've got a shot.
Bobby, does Panama crashing out, which I think we all expect? I'm not unrealistic in this, and neither should anybody else. The Panamanians aren't unrealistic either. If you saw their announcers crying before that World Cup game, you know, in large part, this tournament is about being on the world stage more than it is saying, you know what, semifinals, here we come. What does this tournament mean to Panama, even if they crash out? Are they going to crash out?
I don't like the fact that you use the word crash out there. Because there's
that's a good point.
Like, Panama can't crash out. They've got nothing to lose. They're here for the experience. It's amazing for the people. So what do they have to gain? They just have to gain the experience and the emotion of watching your team in a World Cup, which is everything. It's amazing. So there's no such thing as crashing out for Panama.
Yeah, that was one of the moments of the World Cup for me, seeing all the players, Anibal Godoy.
Anibal Godoy looked like he was the emotion there. I mean, and that's, we'll get to this in the mailbag, because somebody hit us about 48 teams, and there's a lot of people out there saying, oh, it'll ruin the tournament. Don't add these 16 teams. And I just can't, I don't understand that when I watch, like, Argentina, Croatia in the first half, and neither team are particularly good, and Croatia's great in the second half. I'll get into this in the mailbag. We'll get there. I'm riled up about it. But, look, MLS and the World Cup's not just between the lines with cleats on, trying to kick the ball in the back of the net. Of course, it's referees as well. And look, Jerem Rufo's got his first assignment. He's going to take on Belgium and Tunisia. Corey Rockwell will be an AR in that one as well. Mark Geiger was the ref, along with Joe Fletcher and Frank Anderson on the sidelines for Portugal and Morocco. Portugal won 1-0. Cristiano Ronaldo, who else, got the goal here. And then Morocco's players started talking mess. They were frustrated. They did not like the refereeing. They had a couple PKs they thought they should have had, thought it should have gone to video review. It, of course, did not. And then they started spreading rumors. They started saying that Mark Geiger asked for Cristiano Ronaldo's jersey at halftime, that Pepe told them that this is what happened, and just started propagating. FIFA put out a statement saying, hey, by the way, this is complete BS. That did not happen. But poor Mark Geiger. I thought he had a good game. I thought he handled it well. I thought the PK shouts were certainly not clear and obvious. Never should have gone to video review. You could quibble about them, and that's what losing teams do. But to have this come out, this accusation, have to deal with this right when the tournament starts, when he's probably going to get another game or would have, it's crazy, man.
Yeah.
It's almost cruel.
You know, I actually played in a match, I think – I can't remember what referee it was, and I would hate to misname them, but
right.
That asked for Cuauhtemoc Blanco's jersey.
I remember this story.
And
tell me the story, and I'm going to see if I can't find it.
It was, I can't remember the year, but Temo was on the team, and, you know.
How did this go down?
I think it was just sort of a casual thing. The locker room in Toyota Park is really close to the referee's locker. There may have been a moment, but I think he asked for a kit afterwards, and I think he ended up getting suspended. I would hate to name names, and hopefully I'm wrong about this whole thing, because it was bizarre. But we did a little piece on, you know, the passion around Blanco, but to see it extend to that level, that's
Do you think
tough.
It's wrong? Is it wrong of the referee to do that?
It's unprofessional. You know, it's unprofessional. If you're going to play at that level, it's customary between players, but even if you're a referee and you admire, look, all referees will admire the great players.
Yeah,
that
of course.
Play
just
in
like anyone else. They're humans, man.
Yeah. But there's just a line that you can't cross.
Correct.
As far as doing that.
When you're the arbiter, you're the one that's supposed to uphold the laws of the game and have no bias whatsoever. You can't show the possibility of a bias.
Right.
It can't happen, because all of a sudden every decision you make is undercut. Every decision you make is subject to review. No pun intended. Every decision you make is under the microscope, as it should be.
And it can be used. That's what they're trying to do, is to attack his credibility with
Geiger
here, which I'm sure was completely bogus. You're not going to especially go to the world's biggest stage, the world's biggest game, and do something like
that.
When
you have a microphone on that's recording every single thing you say.
Yeah,
like,
no
by
chance.
The way, that is part of video assistant referee video review, is that all these guys are mic'd up, and if you've watched some of the features on MLSsoccer.com recently, you know that audio exists after the fact. Like, you can't go sign language, just Ronaldo,
cameras.
Like, with your hands, like, give me your jersey, please, like, so I don't get caught. Like, there's cameras everywhere. It's the World Cup, and Morocco unhappy, I get it. I love the way they played, but I don't know if you've heard the story of Essie Bahamas. Anybody recognize that name? Mm-hmm. American referee, 1998 World Cup. He was refereeing Brazil and Norway. He called a controversial penalty that gave Norway a win in the 88th minute. They advanced to the round of 16. What team suffered in that case in 98, didn't make it, would have before? Morocco. So they have a long history here with American referees and looking at Americans and saying, you hosed us. Now, by the way, Bahamas' call in the moment was panned because the all the cameras on the broadcast didn't show the tug on the jersey in the box. A couple days later, I think it was a Swedish television station brought out footage where you could clearly see the tug. But for like 2 days, 36 hours, he was in the middle of a firestorm.
Could this be a fallout for the 2026 World Cup decision?
I don't know.
Nah, that'd be too deep. That's too deep.
Well, maybe not too deep, though. I don't know. Look, it was a bizarre moment at the World Cup. Mark Geiger, I thought, did a good job. We'll see if he gets some more games going forward. Keep watching. We'll keep covering it here. Let's talk U.S. Open Cup. Quarterfinals are set now. If you haven't been following some results from this week, LAFC 89th minute goal from Latif Blessing to take down Sacramento Republic. 3-2 win for LAFC, their first ever U.S. Open Cup. My takeaways here, Diego Rossi is very, very good. He was assaulting the post in this game. Lee Wynn looked pretty good at the 10. And finally, Latif Blessing is your secret weapon, who's not really secret anymore in the U.S. Open Cup. He was absolutely spectacular, electrifying last year for Sporting Kansas City on the way to the title. This goal is not a thing of beauty, but I just love Latif like a fish caught in the netting in stoppage time.
He's also always been one of those players that it felt like his skill exceeded what he was putting out in performances. And if it ever clicked that he had the pace, the acceleration, the skill on the ball, all of these independent attributes, that he could be a really, really good player. And it feels like we've been waiting, especially KC fans, for it to finally come
out.
He's
still young, too. He's still young. And he never really got a chance in KC. I was shocked they let him go with the amount of money that he makes. It's not much. And when he's on the field, he unbalances defenders. He's direct. He's not going to be a guy where you're like, oh, man, the combination play. He's not going to take a bunch of people 1v1, but he's effective. He's effective, and LAFC are making a run with him at the forefront. Big game-winning goal. We'll talk a lot more about Orlando City, but they got through on PKs, complete with an 80-minute delay at Maryland Soccerplex. DC United go down, one of the few losses they've suffered there. Orlando City's CEO says they hope to have a coach next week. Bobby Murphy got the job done in this one. All the players are saying, hey, you know, this is the business. This is what happens with Jason Kreis. I mean, like I said, we'll get into this in the second segment. But when you're having a bad season, what does Open Cup mean? How do you communicate it about it in the locker room?
It means two things. One, it's something to play for. You know, a lot of these teams don't have a trophy at the end of the season, not going to win Supporters Shield. They're probably not going to win MLS Cup. So it's nice to feel like you're competing for something important. But second, it's a chance for guys to prove that they deserve to get on the field. Because a lot of times losing teams, sometimes they rotate, but sometimes they don't. They feel like they're going to get there with the same starting 11. So for the guys that aren't playing, it's your choice to say, hey, you're making a mistake putting out the same team that loses every week, and this is my chance to prove that to you.
Justin Miriam with a goal. Steve Clark with a little bit of a howler. He'll reflect on that one and want it back. In the end, PKs go Orlando City's way.
Important to point out that Orlando played some form of a 3-5-2, a 3-5-1-2, something along those lines, but it was a new formation, clearly trying to fix their defensive woes.
Yeah, we'll see what happens with them. As I said, CEO says they hope to have a coach next week. Caleb Porter has, per reports, interviewed for this job already, and of course there have been some big names linked to it as well. We'll see what happens here. Right now, Flavio Da Silva is apparently in Russia at the World Cup, but the GM and the CEO are conducting the search. As it goes, Atlanta United set a U.S. Open Cup attendance record. 41,012 tickets sold and distributed. Mercedes-Benz Stadium was packed. The fans did not get a goal out of it. The Fire via Nemanja Nikolic move on, and Louisville City kept it rolling 2-1 against Nashville. Now they're only USL team remaining. The rest are MLS teams. Houston Dynamo also winners earlier in the week via Mauro Minota's header. And
you know there's a bonus that comes with being the last USL team left?
Is there?
Yeah.
Who gets that? The teams?
The club gets it, and they get to choose whether they give it to the players, but they almost always give it to the players. So it's something all lower.
Did you get that bonus?
I did not, but only because of Soren Stojka. No hard feelings. But yeah, that's a nice little incentive for some of the low, not just advancing, but there's also a cash incentive.
So here's the quarterfinal matchups here. Philadelphia Union, Orlando City, all these are going down on July 18th. Chicago Fire, Louisville City, that's on the East and Midwest regions. Midwest region and West region are Houston Dynamo, Sporting Kansas City, classic rivalry from back in the day for the fighting Kalen Cars, and LAFC and the Portland Timbers. So we will have a possibility of a repeat winner. Sporting Kansas City, of course, won the thing last year. If you were a betting man, I would find it hard to bet against Sporting Kansas City here. Of course, Extra Time Live will go to the final. We will have that postgame show from there. When you look at this, I know it's early. I know it's quarterfinals. It depends on who puts their time in. Depends on who puts their first team players on the field.
But at this point, they probably all will. Right? If you've made it to the quarterfinals, it's pretty likely that they're all going to play their top team.
Yeah, this is usually about the time where clubs start to weed out some of the young guns, where you're like, oh, man, you've had a great run for us. Thanks for getting us to the next round.
Hey, but come see me in my office real quick. Yes. It was a hard decision for me, young Kaylin. Yeah. You've led the tournament in scoring.
Oh, we weren't, you know, necessarily going to dig back into that. I feel like I've gone through that a while now, Dave Sarakin. I think LAFC can actually use this tournament for preparation for them. All these other teams have some experience in the past playing in cup tournaments and playoff situations. For LAFC, this is their first time. So to be able to use this in meaningful knockout atmosphere and games, I think will be good for them. Looking forward towards
Did playoffs. Anybody actually care about the CCL when you guys were playing? You win the Open Cup, you go to CONCACAF Champions League. Was that something that, you know, because Sasha Kleshin said before this match that Bobby Murphy walked in and said, look, guys, if we win this, not only is there prize money, but we go to CCL. We would have this different stage to compete on. And he said that really landed with them.
Yes, we cared.
Was that explicit? Was that like, you have the whiteboard, write it down, CONCACAF Champions League on the line here?
Yes, absolutely. We discussed it. We wanted to make CCL.
Not for me, to be honest. I mean,
Dom didn't always seem to love CCL.
Well, it was just, honestly, it was a different time in the league. There's only so many matches that you can play, and we didn't have the depth of a roster that these teams enjoy now. And also, the profile of CCL wasn't the same. The barometer of, you know, trying to represent for your league and the prize money and getting a chance to advance to, it just wasn't something in your conscience. It was all driven towards MLS Cup. Now, in Chicago, there was an extra emphasis on Open Cup, one of the clubs that really recognized the history and the tradition of that tournament. It matters so much to that group and that club and the city and the supporters. So now you're seeing more and more teams really taking it seriously, where before you'd see, I'm not so interested.
Yeah, there'd be a lot of second teams. There would be a lot of games where you're like, I don't think you're
not even traveling full rosters.
Right,
sometimes.
Like Bruce Arena's like, I'm going to stay in L.A.
Yeah.
You guys head on out to Carolina and see what happens.
Get railhawked.
The semifinals, August 7th or 8th, those are coming up. I think, like you mentioned, the Fire, they've got a good path here between the Union and Orlando City. There's a lot of teams there that are going to put some eggs in that basket, but I think the Fire certainly will be one of them that says, this is important for us. We maybe haven't had the season we wanted. Let's try to get something out of it. Get Bastian Schweinsteiger a trophy here in his final year, I would think, in Chicago. Sporting Kansas City as well. We'll see what happens. Semifinals coming, then the final in late September. Extra Time Live, driven by Continental, will be there. We're going to go to the break. On the other side, MLS at the almost halfway mark. Our narratives for every team going forward.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental, hanging out in the green room. Bobby Warshaw, Kalen Carr with me. We hope you're enjoying the World Cup. But do not forget, Major League Soccer is back. It's been a good week and a half of watching games from, like, I don't know, 6 to 8 a.m. to about 3 in the afternoon. But your nights are taken once again, and this weekend's got a good slate for you to take a look over. I think the biggest game, arguably Atlanta-Portland, that's Fox Sunday, 4:30 p.m. Eastern. Check that one out on Fox Sports Go and MLS Live on DAZN as well in Canada. A bunch of other good ones to take a look at. We'll talk about all those, but most importantly, we're going to check in with every single team, all 23 of them, at the almost halfway mark. A lot of teams have played more than, the least is 13 games at this point again, and we do have some teams on 17 already. Columbus Crew SC, I believe, is the only one there. So you're almost to the halfway mark. It's time to give some narratives, what we're looking at going forward, whether or not these teams can make the playoffs. In the interest of fairness, we're doing it alphabetically. Because if we do it by standings, it's just too obvious. It's too easy. If we do it by conferences, you're going to accuse us of being homers for the East. We'll start in the East regardless. Bobby, Atlanta United, get us started. What's the narrative for this team the rest of 2018?
Atlanta United and everything that goes with Atlanta United, the front office, the fans, they're just on a quest to show unequivocally that they are the cream of the crop and that the best organization in Major League Soccer. I mean, they already know it. People around Atlanta already know that they are the best organization. Now they're just trying to prove it to the rest of us that no one is close to them.
Was this Open Cup flameout? Because at home, record crowd, I think
you didn't see Twitter? They didn't care. I mean, no, they didn't
did
want to win.
Care?
They didn't want to win,
who,
Andrew.
Who
didn't,
said that?
Didn't you read Twitter this morning?
My bad. Yeah,
they didn't want to win.
Yeah, coping mechanism.
When they want to win, they win.
Gotcha.
It has been interesting, though, because one of the big differences between this side last year and this year has been their road form, where they've been able to go on the results, grind out some results.
Actually, better at home than on the road. Better home. Better on the road, their record.
Yeah, and but that's the part that I'm trying to figure out is that they were so strong at home, and at first I was celebrating them. I did a whole video around just their road form, but now I'm starting to question a bit about this. Is troubling with their home form, because that's the bread and butter of all MLS teams. When it comes down to it, results get tight. Playoffs, end of the year, you need to be clicking at home. So I think these types of results against Chicago are troubling for me.
There'll be a VAR siren going off in the head of every Atlanta fan. But I do think that is what this year is about for Atlanta. Last year was about establishing themselves, saying, look, we have the culture, we both in the fans, in the front office, and the team itself, to be a difference maker immediately in MLS.
I'll
but that's not enough. You got to lift something.
You do. Before that, though, just as far as the culture and fun part, All-Star there, I think this has the potential to be the best MLS All-Star game ever.
Yeah.
I think it could be the funnest, at
yeah,
least.
Extra Time Live will be there as well. We're everywhere at this point. Also going to be at Audi Field for the opening on July 14th, ahead of the World Cup final. And then we're going to try to get a pickup soccer game. Sorry, Bobby's tapping his clock
I'm just
here.
Saying
we're also going to drink some beers with everyone who listens to the show.
I'm just saying, you wanted to keep it to a minute.
I know, you're right. I'm bad at that.
This is my job within a team. I hold people accountable.
Keep it rolling. By the way, there are some rumors out there, and I'm working on a column about this right now. The Club America is interested in a certain Venezuelan forward, Joseph Martinez. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Who isn't?
Tata Martino says ain't going to happen. We don't need to sell, but he also acknowledges the significance of Club America and the, quote, grandness of that club. Chicago, Kalen, what's their narrative?
Well, I think getting a trophy and an Open Cup, I think, has to be their best chance right now. I know I'm going to be glued to their Open Cup matches to be able to get them claim.
I love the Louisville matchup, by the way.
Can we say how your answer for them, their narrative is to win a trophy? Who says to win a trophy, though?
Yeah, well, you know, I guess. All right, every team. But it's my former team, Bobby, so I want them to win the trophy. How about that?
I'm going
to
throw out summer.
Yeah, they got to make a move.
Because the January window was so disappointing, and it was such a big flop for the expectations given Bastian Schweinsteiger in last year and where they had elevated themselves to. And all the talk and the trade of David Akam and the rumors and Juan Quintero and all the blah, 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 blah. And then crickets. Alexander Katai. And now we don't even know that he's going to stick around. We're not sure. They've got to exercise that and figure out what that deal is going to mean. So for Chicago, I'm with you. A trophy, certainly. But to win that trophy, you got to get some difference makers this summer. Colorado Rapids, my narrative for the rest of the year for them, don't embarrass yourselves. Don't embarrass yourselves because we're almost past that point now. Rapids, 0.64 points per game. The worst in Major League Soccer. Rapids, 2 wins. Rapids, no wins on the road. Rapids, 9 losses. Rapids, what, 8 straight games without a win at this point? The narrative for this team the rest of the way is to not embarrass yourselves, which you've done so far, and show some sign that next year will be better. Whether that's developing your young kids, whether that's seeing some of these signings come good, and you just, you know what, you say, like, look, it took a 6-month period for these guys to figure out our league. And by the way, I didn't even rail on them enough. They lost 8 straight. They're 9 without a win.
Did you see the rumor that Jack Rodwell is trying to come to Major League Soccer, though?
Really?
Y'all ready for that Jack Price, Jack Rodwell championship?
Jack squared?
Let's go.
Okay. I don't think that's going to fix anything for him.
But it's going to happen. You kind of deep down know it's going to happen.
Crew SC, Bobby. By the way, Stefan Agner signed 3rd Bundesliga. Mm-hmm. That one worked out pretty well as well.
The Crew SC, I'm wondering if their lack of perceived high-end talent comes to catch up with them. We talk about the system. We talk about how the sum exceeds the individual parts. And I'm wondering if there is regression to the mean on that. If you can only be so good with potentially not top-end talent at certain positions.
I take issue that they don't have top-end talent, though. Zach Steffen, for me, is the best goalkeeper in the league. Will Trapp, only emerging, captain for the U.S. men's national team. Harrison Afful, probably the best right back in Major League Soccer.
Milton Valenzuela has an argument.
No,
left back.
You're right. They definitely have 5 or 6 guys. But
I understand what you're saying as far as
the perception. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jesse Zardes, does he win the Golden Boot?
That was my backup one.
Because if he does win the Golden Boot, I mean, it's a given that they're going to have their season will follow his form. Mm-hmm. That's what I get the most concerned about with this team. I love Pillow Feet. Adam John is my guy based almost strictly upon his late game heroics and his nickname. But Jesse Zardes is the key for this team to push on and stay at this level right now.
Because I want to point out about Zardes, I think he has, 10, 11 goals now? But I went back through each one, and 4 or 5 came, but just freak accidents that were really lucky that you can't expect to happen again. He actually only has 5 or 6 goals that you can expect to be replicated. And I just worry that once those lucky things leave or stop happening, maybe the goals dry up. So I'm going to keep an eye on that.
Crew SC right now, 3rd in the Eastern Conference, 27 points. They've got 7 wins, 4 losses, 6 ties. A little middling on the away, but we'll see what happens with them. DC United knocked out of the Open Cup, Kalen. They're going to open up their new stadium. What's their narrative?
Playoffs? Relevance? I don't know. I mean, they've got 10 points. They've played less games than everyone. You have to note that. But, you know, this team has just been pushed further and further outside of the conversation unless they're put on a rundown. and that's because of their play on the field. Hasn't warranted to it yet. I'm not quite sure what the plan is there going forward. You hear rumors of Wayne Rooney. How does he fit into this team? Is that going to happen? Is it not going to happen? But I hope that they find a way, because to open the stadium, you really got to get into the playoffs to make it matter, to get people galvanized around the club, around the city, and make some noise. So you can bring in Wayne Rooney, you can bring these people, but if it doesn't result to points on the field, it's not going to matter.
You build a stadium, if people walk out of that stadium thinking, why would I come watch this team? That's absolutely worst case scenario for all these years of heartbreak and trouble and grinding and trying to get this stadium built. And it's in such an amazing place. And we've heard all the reports about some of the little idiosyncrasies that may not be perfect. Well, those will all fade into the background if you win.
Well, after RFK, any idiosyncrasy is going to be fine for DC fans. And this is just for those of us that have been around the league, this is one of the biggest clubs in MLS and the most important. So I really want them to have their moment back in the cultural consciousness of Major League Soccer, because they deserve it and the fans there deserve it.
Can I give one shout out right now? When you talk about cultural consciousness and the fans and what they deserve, I hope the Barra Brava find a solution to the issues that they have right now with the front office. They've brought so much to the stands, to the culture of this league, to the broadcasts that you watch. I mean, they helped really create MLS supporters culture, and those bouncing stands, you'll never forget them at RFK. So I hope Barra Brava, I hope you and all your folks
My
find
favorite
a
away game, bar none, DC United as a player.
Yep.
Favorite place to play.
Both of you?
Yep.
The pitch, or the fans, what was the?
The whole thing, the sweaty stadium, the pitch was perfect, the bouncing fans, the history, it felt like I grew
Downtown.
Up watching. Yeah, I grew up watching, you know, Eddie Pope, Jeff Agus, all these, Jaime Moran, all these incredible players. So Ben Olsen, got to play against him, all those guys. So that is still a through line with the club. I just hope they find their footing.
Dallas is the next one. That would be me. They've been on an incredible run of form here. Second in the Western Conference, 29 points. They are just four back of Atlanta United and tied with Sporting Kansas City. So right up at the top, they got the shield. They don't have the playoff success. They crashed last year. The narrative for me is, what, get through the summer, and what's that going to bring? Because last year, the summer was just the dark days for them. All the rumors, all the stuff with Argentina, with Michael Barrios, with Ruti, and it just crashed and burned. This incredible project that we had all been talking up for years and years and years. So this, to me, will this be the year they finally reach their potential where it matters most? And that is the second half of the season and in the playoffs. And I think this team is built in a way to do it. And I love the fact that Oscar Pereja is not putting it all on Mauro Diaz's shoulders. We saw what happened with another Argentine number 10 when that happened. I think it's good for the health of their franchise. I think it's good for the health of Mauro Diaz. I think it's good for the overall chemistry in the locker room and the game-by-game matchups. Not necessarily to have Mauro Diaz on the bench, but to have him not be the guy who has to carry all the weight on his shoulders. So FC Dallas, I think it's about the summer. Get through it without pissing somebody off, please. Sign another difference maker if you must, but keep this group together, because they have the ability across the board to get the job done.
It's that weird blend of continuing what you're doing and finding a way to keep in that simplicity and growing within it, which is everyone that's done that kind of thing knows it's really hard to do.
Keeping it fresh, too, as well. Houston, Bobby, what do you got?
For me, it's the same thing it's been for the last year, and we know this Houston team can be very, very good if they can just finish their chances. It feels like so often they play well, they dominate games, they create more chances than the other team, then Albert Elise, Romel Kyoto just miss.
Yeah,
they just miss, and it sounds so simple, but to me, it's how well they can do their chance conversion will determine how far they can make it.
Houston Dynamo right now outside the playoffs. Looking in, only 14 games played. They got a couple teams above them that have played more. Still no good on the road. 1-3-3, much better at home than most teams. 5-2, but yeah.
On the positive side, Tomas Martinez is turning into one of those guys that is not quite must see, but really enjoyable to watch every week.
Yeah, I like him. I like him.
Elise, La Panterita.
He's one of the most exciting.
He's one of the guys I want to see at the All Star game. He's a definite all-star.
But I still just want to point out, he is the main reason I have this as my narrative, because he still misses too many opportunities. So as amazing as he is and the burden he carries, he needs to score at a higher rate for them to get points consistently.
I think Benotas has got to be the one that picks up that slack.
Oh, okay.
Because I just don't know that either of those two guys are going to be – they're not going to be the BWP of finishing. It's just not going to happen. That's not who they are. But they are going to put backlines under pressure, And ultimately, that pressure at some point is going to pay off. LAFC, Kalen, what's the rest of 2018 about for them?
Well, they've got off to such a great start, and they've really gotten everything right. It's been incredible. Even their moves when they've had to replace guys with Diamande are already starting to pay out. So LAFC, really, the sky's the limit for them. I don't see anything slowing them down. Carlos Vela killing it at the World Cup, him coming back. It's just the thing that scares me, and this is what happened last year with Atlanta United, is just that experience, that institutional knowledge from going through tough competitions together, and this is what we referenced with the Open Cup as a potential opportunity for them to kind of steel themselves a little bit for what's coming. But there's really no way to prepare for something you've never met before, and that's the only thing that scares me with them.
And you're saying as a group, because obviously Bob Bradley has done that as an individual. And some of these other folks have done it as individuals.
Laurent Simon, they've got Benny Fielhaber. Yeah. They've got experienced pieces. That will help, no doubt. But even when you look at the projects before, Toronto FC, the first time they made the playoffs, 2015, what did they do? Went to Montreal, got smacked 3-0. I was at that match. The next year, they go a step further, carry it all the way to MLS Cup. They lose that one. The next one, they come through and win. So there's a process in place for teams to be successful. It doesn't all just click right away. That's the challenge for Atlanta United this year. But LAFC, a lot more unknown.
Does it concern you, either of you, that they have the one win in their last five in MLS play? Of course, they got it against Sacramento Republic, but that was a late goal as well. That one win is San Jose, and it was kind of the wild, weird win. Any concerns that hot start might have been kind of a flash in the pan, that people just didn't know who they were?
No, undefeated at home, five away wins. That tells a lot to me about what this team is made up, at least mentally, and a lot of talent. The other thing with them is they haven't quite finished building out their roster yet. There's still potential
for them to make moves. Andre Horta's on the plane. He's on the way.
And talking to John Thorington, he's looking forward to that for him.
What did John say about Horta?
He was just saying what a player he was, how he's going to be able to help him right away. So I think they would have liked to have him in earlier, but this is when he's arriving, and perfect timing with all the guys coming back from the World Cup. You add Huerta into the mix.
Of every tactical and personnel question around the league, this is one I'm most excited to see, is how Bob Bradley gets all of these guys in the field and still may not use a true defensive midfielder. Will Benny Fielhaber really be his deepest midfielder for the second half of the year?
I thought Atuesta was very good in the Open Cup. I think his range of passing is much better than people give him, and he's got good vision. Some of the through balls he played last night, the timing of them, the weight of them, very good. I mean, Lee Wins, he's going to have a challenge to just get on the field. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of pieces. We'll see what Bob Rowdy can do with them over the second half. It's my turn here, LA Galaxy, and I think, as always, it centers around Zlatan. But I'm going to go the other way because we kind of know what the deal is with Zlatan, and that we know it's going to be a bit of a circus. He's going to get goals. He's going to demand a whole lot of attention. He's drawn a lot of it away from the Dos Santi, but ultimately those two will be the key. Again, always put it on repeat about whether or not this team reaches their potential, because they're two guys – A, on the money side, on the expectation side, but B, I just think in the place they play on the field. Jonathan Dos Santos is the key to this team having some sort of balance. We know that back line isn't very good. It can be really gappy. Okay, so Perry Kitchen hasn't had the best season. Well, you need a number eight who can cover both and really, really direct traffic. Now, and I'm saying going forward. I'm saying when you're going back and defending and saying, okay, I broke up that counterattack, the Diego Chará role, basically. Like, I'm going to be indefatigable. I'm going to be extremely fit. I'm going to go break up everything I can, and I'm going to be tidy on the ball and push it forward when I have to. And they just haven't got that from either him, and certainly not the attacking verb from his brother. They're two world-class players. We know that. We've seen that in the past. They've not shown that in LA. And you paid, what, probably $10 million total over the course of the season for not getting that? You have to get it. Otherwise, this team's not going to they're not going to reach their potential. They're not going to be there in the playoffs when the times are tough. They're not going to be pushing for a title. They're going to be talked about as busts. The team, the players, Siggy Schmidt, all of it. And that's what's at stake for the LA Galaxy. Right now, Minnesota United, Bobby?
You guys, I'm just still trying to figure out who Minnesota United is as a club and as a team. How do they like to play? What's their general path to success? What's their identity on and off the field? So hopefully they start to cement that now that they're starting to make some bigger signings. Because I don't know who they are, and I hope that they start to build some identity on how they plan to win trophies, whether it's now or in the future.
It's been a bit scattered. It certainly has. It's been scattered in the transfer market. It's been scattered, I think, on the field. certainly the performance on that back line has not been good, and you'll sense a theme here. Teams that don't have good defenses in this league or don't have defenses that can somewhat trust don't do well. And if we're going to harp on Argentina again, that's where you go back to it, because if you don't have a good foundation, what the hell are the six guys in front going to do, or however many you're pushing forward?
It's not even – we talk about this on the show a lot. It's not even the fact that they're losing right now, Andrew. I just don't understand how they're building for the future for anything. I mean, they play a 4-2-3-1 like everyone else plays. They play a block and they press the same way everyone else plays, but they don't spend as much money or sign as good of players or find inefficiencies in the market to have any kind of competitive advantage. They're literally doing what everyone else is doing, but not as well without as big of a budget. And I just have no idea how that's a path to success. And I would like to see them have some answer for that in the second half of the year.
We'll see. Darwin Quintero, of course, their big DP signing. There's some rumors out there that they're after an Ecuadorian winger with a couple caps. I think Roland Ibarra. I'd be lying if I said I remembered the tweet I just read that said he's coming. But you go check that out. The reporting is on The Athletic right now. Montreal, Kalen.
Piatti.
Remy Gard's been smoking this entire team.
Piatti. But, you know, you only have so long to do that when you're Remy Gard, where you can only get that response of calling out your team and then, you know, guys step up and try and respond to that, and then results come your way and then it falls apart and you call your team out again. That starts to wear thin in a locker room after a while because it becomes a little bit of a ploy. And the one who seems most frustrated right now seems to be Piatti. I mean, even some of his comments you hear after a match where he says, if I'm the problem, I'll go. It's not what you want to hear from your most talented player. When he's out there, I mean, he's one of the best players in the league, probably top 2, 3, 4 players.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as talent and ability. So there's a market for him if you do want to move on.
Do you think they do move on from him?
No chance.
I don't think so. I wouldn't. Mm. He's too important to that team. He's too important for that market. And he's too talented.
I just think he also makes too much money. So the only place, and in his age, so the only place that it makes sense to trade him to is a place that's so very clearly in win-now mode and potentially gets a little bit desperate. So like a Seattle or maybe an Atlanta if they sell one of their big-name guys. But there just isn't a – there's not like a lockstep landing spot for him within MLS. And with the amount of money he makes, why would he go anywhere that pays him less? His contract is good.
Here's a crazy idea, which I haven't totally worked out the numbers on. But what if there's some kind of Jovinko for Piatti swap? Jovinko wants a new contract. Saputo is obviously Italian, would love to have Jovinko there. He gives him the money he wants. Piatti's a stopgap who can certainly do the job for this year or next year until they find a new Jovinko. I just wanted to throw that out there, something I've been thinking about.
I mean, when you first said it, I was like, man, Bobby Warshaw is bringing a crazy take here. But then I started to convince myself that, like, if things went really south between Jovinko and TFC's front office somehow, some way.
Yeah, it's two situations that are really on a precipice right now and could potentially both go badly if their contract situations are there.
It would have to go really badly between Sebastian Jovinko and Toronto FC.
Well, the thing about
but
Jovinko...
In this other world that you've created in which Piatti plays on Toronto,
That would be awesome. But think about Jovinko.
Go ahead. No, you're going.
No, my only thing about Jovinko is, listen, when this stuff happens, when you're at his age, you either do it too early or you do it too late. And it's really, really not enough really to use here, dangerous to do it too late. That's what cripples clubs for 2 or 3 years at a time. So even though right now we're like, dude, there's no chance to get rid of Jovinko, he's getting to the age and the contract status where you say, before we know it, it might be too late, which is why you have to do it too early, which is why it could come before any of us think of it.
Here's the thing. If you make this trade, Toronto FC fans are going to react to this trade the way U.S. fans have reacted to Landon Donovan doing the Wells Fargo deal.
Exactly.
They are going to flip out.
Really? You think so? They wouldn't want Piatti?
God, are you kidding me? I mean, they might, but not in exchange for the guy who's like been their talisman for 3 years and is arguably the best player in the league, if we're talking about who the best player in the league is. Toronto FC fans would go ape. It would be, I mean, oh my God, what that would do to this rivalry though. Ooh, I would love to see it once again. Fantasy
have we
world.
Seen that in other sports where someone goes to
Johnny Damon, he wasn't traded but free agent, went from
Johnny Damon. Yeah, but yeah. Johnny Damon's like, he wasn't I grew up watching Johnny Damon at the Wichita Wranglers, double A affiliate in Wichita, Kansas, of the Royals. They traded him after he got to the bigs. But, like, Johnny Damon wasn't the man.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? He's like a kind of a cool, funny talisman who grew beards and, like, said funny things.
Oh, Figo. Luis Figo.
Luis Figo is a good example. Yeah, that's a good one. Mm-hmm. It can't happen, but I want to imagine a world in which it could. New England, the Revs. I think they've punched above their weight a little bit this year. Brad Friedel's come in and made very clear what his expectations are. I think the second half of this year is about making the playoffs, shedding dead weight, and setting the tone for what this club is going to be going forward. So, like, you know, no offense to Christian Namath, but I would not expect Christian Namath to be with this club after this season unless there's a money thing that just they can't get out of it in any way. So he's already set his tone. Continue to reinforce that. Get a little success. Get to the playoffs. Once there, it's all good. Doesn't matter how far you go. You've got a little bit of buy-in from your players. Use another window, and actually it'd be two because they got the summer, to build the squad that Brad Friedel sees in his mind's eye and can play the way that he wants to play, because I think what he's shown so far is that he can be among the best coaches in this league and that his background and the things that he's gathered along the way put him in position to do that. But ultimately, with the Revs, what we've seen over the years is you got to spend the right money on the right players, and by and large, they haven't done that in a lot of cases. Or moves have blown up in their face. Kai Kamara, for instance.
It does kind of seem like Brad Friedel is going to be a good coach, and at this point, it's just a question of who from this current group he takes with him on that journey.
And that's what the rest of it's about. Like, okay, are you in my plans? And every single player on that team, I'm sure as any player on any team, understands that they're playing for their job in the next year. But I think the future of the Revs is bright because I think Brad Friedel. I'm trying to Mitch Future and Friedel. I think his future is very, very bright. So that's me on the Revs. We'll see what happens with them. I still wonder why Juan Agudelo can't get minutes. And that may go back to what Brad Friedel wants and needs, and maybe he's not getting it. New York City FC, Bobby. New coach, Dominic Torrent.
Yeah, this is the easiest one. How do they handle the transition from Patrick Vieira to Dominic Torrent? New head coach, maybe a new philosophy, probably not, but just getting used to a new guy in charge. How do the players and the organization deal with that transition?
Red Bulls, I think that one's pretty easy. Put a bow on it.
I guess, will there be a transition?
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many reports coming out saying, you know, is Red Bull Leipzig going to come after Jesse Marsh and try and bring him abroad? He's been such an incredible...
By the way, it sounds like Leipzig got their new head coach.
Is that for sure, or is that just a rumor?
But I don't know. It seems pretty sure. The Hoffenheim head coach, 30-year-old.
Julian Nagelsmann?
Mm-hmm.
What have we done with our lives, Kalen?
I wasn't going to try to pronounce that. I wasn't going to try.
Yeah, 30 years
old.
But
Salzburg, too. I mean, look, he's made clear what he wants, which is to test himself in Europe one day.
Mm-hmm.
And so when that job comes, what do you do? What if he stays? Then what's your narrative?
Well, I think this team can challenge for MLS Cup. I think a big part of that is the continuity that has been there. I would worry about it if that becomes disrupted. But with NYCFC and Atlanta, the two teams above them right now, in my mind, I know Columbus Crew is right there as well. NYCFC losing Patrick Vieira, I think that's going to be a harder adjustment than maybe some are expecting. Toronto, obviously near the bottom right now. Columbus right there, but... I think this Red Bull team has something special. They've got the personality. They've got the striker up top, dependable goals. Tyler Adams, he's growing in confidence with the U.S. men's national team. I really like they utilize their depth so well, even in this busy stretch, to be able to get guys ready within the squad. So I really like this Red Bull team. I hope they're able to keep this group together and intact and building forward, because I would love to see what they're able to do come playoff time.
Is it a little bit of... I'm not going to say a last chance for Red Bulls, because it certainly isn't. But if you're among those, and there are many of us, and I think I'd be included in that, saying that Tyler Adams, this is more than likely his last year in Major League Soccer, given the offers that you'd think would come for him and given his ambitions, and also given the fact that Tim Parker has 6 months left on his deal and could sign a pre-contract, could this might be a last hurrah for this particular group, which is not to say that they couldn't go reload, couldn't go find new pieces, couldn't push forward. But the Tim Parkers of the world and the Tyler Adams of the world, and if you're playing ETR bingo, I just said of the world twice, so go ahead and drink, mark off a square, whatever you do. You lose those two guys, that's a big loss.
It's big, but I'm less concerned about that, partly because they just announced the long-term deal for Dennis Hamlett. And I know I'm a bit biased because I have a personal relationship with Dennis, played for him in Chicago, drafted me. But he's been able to retool this team before. You know, I mean, he's brought in these players from the academy. Tyler Adams was the guy that he handpicked to really bring up and give a chance when a lot of people weren't thinking he was really ready. And they go out and get Tim Parker just this year. So he's been able to identify the right talent to reimagine this team in the right way. So I think that signing, while it won't stand out in the ones mm-hmm. that they've made over the past, you know, 6 to 8 months, that's a big one.
To that point, back to Minnesota, if you're Dennis Hamlett, when you're out in the world market, when you're looking at prospects, when you're super draft, when you have archetypes, you know what players fit into your system. You know that if we get Vincent Bezicourt, there's a chance that we can develop into a good MLS player. Florian Vallot, same thing. That's one of those things that Minnesota's missing that the Red Bulls have. They have an identity, they have a game plan, and they know how to execute against that. Let's see. I'm on Orlando, which is pretty easy right now. Who are you going to hire? Who's your head coach? And can that head coach get the best out of your current roster? Because I'm not sure that you have the flexibility to go out and make huge changes. And I'm not sure you should be going out and making huge changes to your roster when you don't have a head coach. So who are you going to hire? And the reports are as such, Paul Tenori reporting that Caleb Porter has interviewed with Orlando City, that he had to get permission, by the way. Taylor Tolan reported this, that Orlando City had to ask Portland for permission to interview him, which says to me that there's a buyout agreement in there. So when we saw Caleb Porter abruptly resign, maybe that was more along the lines of Portland saying, hey, it's time for us to part ways. I think this one has run its course. We're going to go get Giovanni Savarese. You figure out what you're going to do, but we are going to pay you X amount in the interim to do that. That's interesting. This is also interesting. Nikki Bulic, the GEO or the CEO, GM? Yeah, I'm mixing these two guys up. The GM of Orlando City says the candidates will be separated into four categories. For instance, who's hungriest, the youngest, the most experienced, and the leaders of those categories will be submitted to the CEO and Flavio Da Silva for review. That seems like a little bit of a weird way to do it. Kaká, according to reports, will not be a part of Orlando City front office for now. They say there is a, you know, there's an open door policy for him, but it doesn't seem like these big names are necessarily the front runners. Some USL guys in the mix, but Dunga, Scolari, Carlos Quiroz, all names that have been mooted as well.
Can I say what this reminds me of? This reminds me of early days Toronto FC, and I think Orlando is dangerously close to becoming that iteration of that franchise where they want to run before they can walk, and they keep coming up with big solutions and big player moves to try and make this a super club right away. And it doesn't work that way. When you have continuity, I was talking to Dwayne De Rosario, and he was saying in those Toronto years, he had 100 different players over the span of maybe 3 or 4 years, multiple coaches, big names from abroad coming in, and it never worked, right? Finally, they make a decision, they start to build, and look what they have now. Orlando, to me, is in the same place where they want to be an MLS super club, but they haven't committed to any vision, and they're only going to turn things over and over. This seemed like a quick stopgap at the beginning of the season to really try and, you know, essentially buy wins right away without really giving it time to develop. I'm not saying Jason Christ doesn't, you know, fall on the sword for the results or bear responsibility for the results of his team, but the front office, to me, has bigger questions as far as the direction they're taking this organization and the way they're trying to win now at all costs.
I agree. You better get this hire right. And it better be the sort of hire that leads you down a path where you build. Not just like, oh, for now. And they kind of said when they did it, like, this is how it works in world soccer. And it's like, well, yeah, a lot of clubs work that way in world soccer. And a lot of clubs are completely in chaos.
But this
and
league is
we
different.
We have no idea what's going to happen.
But this league is different. You can't just go out and buy teams. You have to build teams. You can't just, you know, afford to have players that haven't worked out for you. You know, in Mexico, you can just sit a guy. You can pay him as much as you want, and it's not even going to sweat. You're not even going to sweat him. Here, because of the salary cap, you have to build a team.
Orlando City. We'll see if their building pays off here. Philadelphia, that falls to Bobby. You're getting really fortunate with these.
I was wondering if you did that on purpose.
I didn't time it out that way. I just kind of went 1, 2, 3. And
listen, every year in Major League Soccer, there's a team that plays really good soccer. We enjoy watching them. We feel like they're really good, but they lose more than they win. And this year, I'm just wondering if that's going to be Philadelphia. If they can find a way to turn their good soccer, to turn their dominance and possession and flow throughout the game into wins. And specifically, can they just score the dang ball? Can they turn this dominance into good opportunities on goal?
What have you thought, Kalen, of David Akam's season.
Why you got to go there? See, that's like a subtweet. You just subtweeted me on the show.
I did turn away from you and put it to Kalen. But I've heard all you've had to say about David Akam. Because you're talking about putting the ball in the back of the dang net, and the guy who is supposed to do that, David Akam, they spent a bunch of money on Akam. He was supposed to be the piece that elevated them because they made the playoffs 2 years ago, couldn't get it done. Where's the step forward?
That's been a big letdown. You'd have to say it. Just based on the amount they've expended to be able to get him and the expectations of him coming into the club, and just really hasn't translated. It's actually been other players. Marcus Epps has taken a step forward this season in his place. And I think you have to give Jim Curtin some credit for going on performance, and he's had to, because the results haven't been there, and when they've gotten results again, it's because he's earned a little bit of that trust from giving guys opportunities that, maybe outperforming the bigger names.
Right now, the Union, 18 points in 8th place in the Eastern Conference, just a point back of Orlando City, but 1.2 points per game. They're good at home. That's good. They're not good away. They might be able to figure that out. That's been a historical thing for them, just not good on the road. Bobby, did they make the playoffs? Or
yes,
are we talking about end of the season? We were like, you know what, they played great soccer, loved watching them play, they just didn't have enough.
I really have no idea, but if I had to pick, I'd say yes, they get that sixth spot. Toronto goes 5, and they get 6. When I watch them, they just seem like a better team than Chicago, New England, and Orlando.
All right, we'll see what happens. Portland, that's you, Kalen. Giovanni Savarese doing his thing. Right now, 6th place in the West, but they've been good at home. Just open that stadium up. They built a foundation with defense.
And we talked about managers making tough decisions. I think Savarese has had to make some tough ones earlier with Liam Ridgewell in the group. And I think those are just so important early in the season to be able to really earn the trust of a locker room and put your foot down in some ways. And, they're always going to be great at home. I think that's only going to continue, especially with the improvements to the stadium. So I really like this Portland team as far as sheer talent. You wouldn't notice that they were missing Darling Tignagby from last year. Sebastian Blanco's taken a big step forward in his development. I do worry a little bit about Adi. Can he continue to score goals, or can he find ways to get back in top form?
They've got to make the switch to Armenteros full-time. Samuel Armenteros has been better than Adi in almost every game they've played.
And he gives them some more mobility.
Yeah.
I like that part.
More energy. It just feels like in the way they're playing, trying to defend and counter, Armenteros is the right guy for that system.
I think they got to get the best out of both of them, because I just don't. At this point, I look at Adi and I think he's a little bit of a head case, but he can produce. I look at Armenteros and I say he is so driven to get his career back after that Italy debacle that he has the motivation and he's going to run his tail off and he's going to put it in the ground for you. But maybe he doesn't always have the quality that you need, or at least hasn't shown it yet. You know, he has the capability. He scored goals in Europe.
You tell me he hasn't shown the quality?
He's got some good goals.
He's been so good in the games he's played.
Okay, well, that's great. Come in late and be a super sub. Be
but even the games he started, even the games he started, he was great.
All right,
I mean, I appreciate the effort trying to get Adi back on track, but Armenteros has been better this year.
I feel you got to get a little bit of both of them. We'll see what happens for them. RSL is me. They're in the playoff field right now. That's good. That's good. Fix what you got going on with Albert Rusnak, number one. And number two, in the summer, find a way to get a goal scorer. Still don't have one. You still don't have one. And the rest of the field, I actually
why are you sleeping on Corey Baird, bro? What's wrong with Corey Baird?
I'm not sleeping on Corey Baird. I'm napping on him. Maybe next year. Maybe the year after that. Maybe for a team that doesn't make the playoffs. But if he's your starting forward, I just don't see it in the Western Conference, and people are going to say, oh, but you always say the Eastern Conference is better. Well, if you look at the stats, it's kind of evened out, and the West is starting to gain a little bit of ground with FC Dallas rolling up, Portland as well, Vancouver Whitecaps. Sorry, I threw them in there. I had to do it. Their mediocrity is inspiring. We'll get to them in just a little bit. I don't know. Real Salt Lake, I hesitate to say anything definitive about them because every time I do, I pay for it.
Well, interesting.
Every time I say that this is the team that – second half of last year, boy, if RSL get to the playoffs, everybody's going to be scared of them. RSL are getting there. Oh, they didn't do it. Oh, man, this year, RSL is going to be the surprise team. They're going to be at the top of the Western Conference. Well, RSL aren't doing it. They got a lot of great young pieces, and I give props to Mike Pecky for playing them, and I give props for him to getting Danny Acosta onto the field because that's helped them tremendously. But they still don't have a good balance in midfield.
Is Kyle Beckerman a starter?
Once again, if I say something definitive, it's going to blow up in my face. So, for this moment, yes, because Dimir Krylak is not a better 10 than Albert Rusnak is. You don't think
he was for those three games compared to what Rusnak was earlier in the year?
What about last year? You're going to just discount Rusnak?
Rusnak has this habit of really fading out of games. He has a couple games where he's brilliant and we're remembered how talented he is, but I want RSL fans to think about it. Hit us up. In my head, it feels like Rusnak underperforms more than he actually steps up to the occasion.
Okay, well, that's the narrative for them. All the uncertainties, mm-hmm. all the well ifs for RSL. Mm-hmm. If those turn into positives and not negatives, this will be a good season. But they still have a lot of well ifs.
Okay.
Let's see, you're San Jose, Bobby.
Yeah.
It's not pretty right now.
I'm actually stealing exactly what you said for New England. That's what I had written down, was just figure out who's worth keeping. They've made some big investments on international signings. Magnus Eriksson, Vaco, Danny Huson, guys that they were really relying on. And at this point, I totally forgot about him. Even a guy like Florian Youngworth, who's gotten let off the hook a lot, but has been part of a consistently bad team.
Anibal Godoy has a little bit of that in him as
well. Oh, yes, that's another one. So figure out who these guys you've made investments in and who you want to keep moving forward and build your philosophy around those guys.
Would Wando – I'm having trouble saying this out loud. Is there a possibility that Wando could move into that group with Fiorinelli and Michael Stara as a player who – It kind of felt like they tried to do that with him at the beginning, and then he forced his way back in, and it was like, well, nobody else is performing. We know Wando will run like hell, and he'll score goals when he has the opportunity.
And I can totally understand why a coach would do that, right? You can acknowledge that Wando is the best person and a great player and a great professional, but also just say, I need to change the guard, man. I need to bring in all of my new people and build my culture, and even though I trust you to be a good person, I just need something new. So, Andrew, to answer your question, yes, I could see that happening.
Flip side, if he does that, you have to win.
Oh, yeah.
If you push a legend out, you have to win.
Yep.
Period. Seattle, Kalen.
The Great Escape. Can they make another Great Escape? I mean, this has been the story for them at about the halfway mark the last several years, and they've always managed to find a way. And they have the same task in front of them, and the big name come in, Rui Diaz. Excuse me. Thank you. Working on my Espanol.
Yeah.
I don't know if you saw the movement episode. I tried to speak Spanish. Did a couple interviews.
Dude, you crushed it.
It's not going the best.
I'm not
going
to crush you because I'm still smarting from my terrible attempt at Orlando City's GM's name.
Okay. Well, either way, he will be asked a lot. The Peruvian wasn't able to get it done at the World Cup, but I think $7.5 million transfer fee reportedly.
Yeah, that's what the rumor is right now.
So, you know, look, they've needed goals. They haven't gotten goals. They haven't conceded a ton, but they haven't created nearly
They haven't created much, yeah.
To be able to be competitive in matches at home or on the road. So they have the experience. You know that they've done it before. So in some ways, I've been on teams like that where you try and just like kick it in at a certain point. But at some point, it's a little too late to make a great escape, or you'd search for that magic and you just keep waiting for those games to turn around and it doesn't come. That is a tall task in front of them. Getting some new life, especially an injection of pace and goals, will help.
Yeah. What's interesting about this team right now and this window in particular is this is the first time that Garth Lagerwey will come up to the Fan Alliance vote. Remember, they get to vote on their GM there. They can't fire him, but he could potentially be, quote, reassigned if they're not happy. Now, I don't see that happening, but this is a big window for the club, not just because they've never missed the playoffs and they need to find a way back, but because Garth Lagerwey faces this vote at the end of the season. He is the man that they're pointing at right now. Yeah, he's got to land some signings. He promised eight figures. He promised it, so we'll see what happens. I've got Sporting Kansas City because the serendipity continues here. Striker plus fall equal championships. Are they going to get this striker who they said they were going to get last window and who they needed the window before that? Yes or no? Got to go get it. Talk is cheap. Peter Vermees knows that. He's gotten what he needs out of Kyrie Shelton. It's actually worked out extremely well for Sporting Kansas City. They're at the top of the standings. They've gotten fiery starts from Felipe Gutierrez, who then is out for, I think, until about August 1st. Johnny Russell was crushing it for a while there. That was very, very good. Daniel Shalloway, we talked about him on this last show. I love him. I think he's a really good young Same. MLS player, but he's best as about your third option at this point, which he's a great third option. None of that is consistent, necessarily. None of those guys are guys that you look at and say, over the course of 34 games into the playoffs, you are a primary goal scorer. They need that guy, and he will make all of those guys better. So do they get it done? Who is it? and has Vermees and the training staff or whatever it is they've identified as the reason for their late season swoons, have they identified that and fixed it? Maybe it's that they have more depth this year, which they certainly do, and that will help. Maybe it's an approach thing. Maybe it's a scouting thing. Maybe I don't know. Maybe it's a weather thing. I don't. Maybe it's a Casey Summers take the kill you when you train, and by the time you hit fall, you don't have legs. I don't know. But you got to sign that player. You got to figure that out. And if you do, this team is a bona fide MLS Cup contender. Mm-hmm. They are that good. This defense is not going to be the best in the MLS forever. So it's time to make good on all those things. Supporting Kansas City.
Mm-hmm. Already an MLS Cup contender.
For sure, already.
But potentially a favorite if you add a piece like that, like you're describing. Yeah, I would love to see.
I would as well. But the potential contender goes out the window if they have another bad fall.
Right.
Like the goals could dry up, conceivably could. Toronto, that's you, Bobby. Two more to go.
Do they have enough time? I mean, we think that they'll be good. We trust that they will be on a pace that would usually get a team into the playoffs, but having already essentially thrown 14 games away, will they be good enough? They've dug themselves a hole. At this point, they basically have to go at a what would usually win a supporter shield for points per game. And we trust that they'll be good, so will they be good enough?
I don't know how I have to keep saying this year after year after year, but I think people are underestimating Jozy Altidore and how important he is to this team. Mm-hmm. So once he comes back, I think goals come. Gives them he makes Javinko better. He makes all the other pieces fit in a different way. So mm-hmm. Jozy coming back is the key to their success.
I'm going to add two subplots to that. Jonathan Osorio and what I mentioned earlier with Javinko. Both coming up to the end of their contracts. Yes, Javinko has another year, but he would like to sign it now. Jonathan Osorio out of contract. We talked about that on the show before. So just interesting subplots where this team is so good, but you have these little things going on in your locker room that can kind of cause the underwhelming performances we've seen.
Vancouver Whitecaps, finish it there with you, Kalen.
Can we just keep it real at this point and just be like, I'm just here for Alphonso Davies?
Yeah, let's go.
I think that's why
Kalen comes on the show.
I know just there's probably like a larger plot of, you know, a bigger storyline,
sure.
But let's just keep it real. Like, how old is he now? 17, 18? I don't even know.
17, yeah.
17? I mean, we talked about Weston McKennie and Timothy Weah. It's like, you got a kid right here that's just as talented as any of those names. Playing for Vancouver every week, and he's taken a big step. Give Carl Robinson a lot of credit for bringing him along the right way, putting him in the lineup, taking him out, and now reinserting him again. But I want to see his progression, and I know we all will. We sit in here every weekend and watch matches, but I want to see his progression the next 2 months, because it feels like every week he seems to be taking another mm-hmm. step forward. So just seeing where he can get by the end of this year is exciting for me.
You played on the wing in this league a lot. When you watch him right now at the age of 17, run by people, do what he does on the ball, start to add vision to his game in the final third, what pops into your mind?
I'm just glad I'm not playing against him. I've gone up to Vancouver. It's not an easy place to go play to begin with. But, yeah, to try and run with that kid, there would be no hope. But I tell you what, it's not just the pace, because, you know, there's a lot of players who've played in MLS that have pace. I happen to be one of them in my at a certain point in time. I don't know if I had that level of it. But it's the other things that I'm starting to notice this game, that when to make a decision on when to serve the ball early. Checking his shoulder to see Bobby, you and I broke down a play where he sort of understands where Kai is ahead of time before he goes at him. How to turn guys around in the box, and then just the natural ability. But he's thinking the game through and developing every week, so it's exciting.
MLS is back this weekend, Saturday and Sunday. As I mentioned, Atlanta, Portland, 4:30 p.m. Eastern on Sunday on Fox. You've also got your Unimas and Twitter game, Red Bulls FC Dallas. That's a good one on Saturday at 6 p.m. Eastern. Sporting KC, Houston, Colorado, Minnesota playing for respect, Seattle and Chicago. The full lineup, MLSsoccer.com. Let us know what you think. What's at stake for your team in the second half of the season? We're going to the break. Mailbag on the other side.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
One in the head, one in the back, bubbly. Look at the cash coming in.
Back now, Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. We've talked MLS. We've talked World Cup. Let's talk about what you want to talk about. We start with Luke from Milwaukee. He says he was randomly perusing the ESPY Award nominations for Best MLS Player. They've got Nemanja Nikolic, Diego Valeri, Aiko Parra, and Tim Melia. He says he's confused because it's not the four I would have picked, but then I thought, well, maybe they just picked one for each position, forward, midfield, defender, and keeper. Actually, the way they did it was the award winners. So you have the Golden Boot, you've got the MVP, you got the Defender of the Year, and you got the Goalkeeper of the Year. That's how that went down. If you were going to make a vote, guys, which anyone can do at ESPN.com, who wins your 2018 ESPY for Best MLS Player? Now, the timing is weird. I'll grant you that because it comes like 6 months after our season ends. It's in the middle of the summer. It can't really be a wrap-up. Would any of these four be your winner? And if so, who would it be?
I thought they were just last year's All-Star snubs. Kansas City. When is this coming out? I'm confused
here. It's middle of the summer here.
The awards are coming up. This has already been released.
Yeah.
I actually talked to someone. One of my friends is on the committee that helps do this for, I don't know, like the marketing agency. Probably not allowed to say how the sausage is made on that. But I would say Tim Melia. I'm kind of underwhelmed by the other names, and I feel like Tim Melia has really been underappreciated. And give it to a goalie every now and then, so I would vote for Melia.
I'm going to do Aiko Parra just for, you know, what he's going to rock on stage.
Yeah.
He's got the best.
Best tweet, too.
Fashion, yeah, best tweet, best fashion vibe going up there, represent MLS well.
I agree. I like Ike for sure. I'll probably take him a close second to Valeri just because I think, you know, he's an awesome representation of the league, and maybe he'd bring up his daughter Connie onto the stage as well, too. That'd
he's already
cool.
got the MVP, too, so, like, you don't
have okay, let's go. We're all with Ike on
Team
this
Ike.
One.
Team
okay.
Ike. Stephanie in Cincinnati. I was listening to the 2026 World Cup reveal show, and you guys didn't really dig into the 48-team format. Is it good? Is it bad? Are you indifferent?
Just take it away, Andrew. Just take it away.
I have some feelings on this. I think if you are so married to 32, you don't really have a reason. Nobody really does. They say competition, but we watch plenty of bad games in this World Cup. They say qualifying, but qualifying can be tweaked to make it interesting all around. I think it's elitism. I think the desire to stick to 32 is basically that you just want to keep it Europe and South America and everybody else be damned. I think 48 teams is going to make this tournament way more fun. I'm absolutely cool with reducing the group stage, which is normally not that entertaining to me anyway. It's just teams trying to find their feet. So eliminate one group stage match, all good on my part. You've already cut it down to 32 at that point. Then have knockout round games the whole way. They're way more fun. They're way more engaging. They have a lot more at stake. I'm good with all of it. I'm about inclusion on this. And I think if you look at the teams that would potentially come in, your quality's not dropping. You're just opening the door to a whole lot of nations that have the same moment Panama had where they're crying tears of joy and they have an opportunity to make history.
My counter to that would be if there's more teams, don't those tears of joy mean less? It's not, you're right, 32 is an arbitrary number.
That's what somebody who gets into the tournament like six straight times says. That's what somebody who has the attitude of, like, we belong there and we get there, that's what they say. That's not what a team that would get in, that wouldn't normally get in, would say.
All right, so maybe that in itself is a bad example, but isn't there value to exclusivity? Isn't there
smaller... Why is 32 the number that it needs? It's completely made up.
Well, it's less than 48. You're right, it's a made-up number, but it's less than 48.
It was 24 before.
And there's something... It's more special to make a tournament with 32 than it is 48. There's something about watching the elite who could make 32 and 48. So I just think there's value in exclusivity. And
also, is this like spirit of inclusivity, or is this just more dollars?
It's more dollars.
Is that really what this comes down to?
I mean, look, it's always more dollars with FIFA. Let's not kid ourselves. Every single decision they make is about more dollars. So you could either look at it through that jaded side, which we all should always, all the time, and understand where they're making decision-making, but also look at it from the big picture, which is to say, hey, Syria might have been in this World Cup. How cool would that be for Syria, the nation, for Syria, the players, for soccer in the Middle East? Oh, hey, look, Canada might have made it. New Zealand would have made it. Chile, Paraguay, Ecuador, Netherlands,
Italy.
Don't say it. UAE, Uzbekistan, China, Iraq. I mean, basically the big growth is not coming from UEFA. UEFA would get three additional if you're going on some of the math that's been put out there. They already get 13. The big math comes from Asia. It comes from Africa. It comes from CONCACAF. A little bit from CONMEBOL. And it comes from Oceania. It comes from underrepresented places in the World Cup. It comes from underrepresented places in the World Game. It comes from places that basically everybody says, who cares? Backwater.
That's cool.
I think that's cool. I think it's cool to have more of the world involved in the World Cup, because I'm one of those people that says soccer doesn't emanate out of Europe.
Right.
Europe is a flag bearer. Europe clearly has the best club competition in the world. But the World Cup is not the UEFA Champions League.
Yep.
The World Cup is a time for us to celebrate the game, to celebrate what makes it special. To me, having more people there doesn't dilute it. And certainly there are going to be blowouts. But elite teams got blown out in this World Cup. Argentina just got run off the field and looked like garbage. Last World Cup, I think Spain got worked by the Netherlands. Like, blowouts happen. And
Brazil?
Yeah. When you're at the World Cup, it's not a – you haven't been with your team the whole year round. Like, I don't know. I'm just the sort of person that looks at this as a party, looks at it as a cultural event almost more than a sporting event. And I don't actually think the sporting event's going to suffer. I think it's going to be more exciting. I think 32 knockout round games is the stuff of legends. And those group stage games, well, every single one means a whole lot more now. So that's my point. Let me know what you think. 48-team World Cup. Hit us up. Bill Carroll and Red Bull Section 132. Guys, I watched the Portugal-Morocco game to watch the referee. I was truly rooting for Mark Geiger, and I thought he had a very good game. But for the first time ever, I was watching every move he made on the field. And whoever is in charge of how soccer is referee should be fired immediately. I never really noticed how ridiculous it is to put the referee in the center of the storm. Players were using him to set screens. Forwards were running off his back shoulder. I'm not even sure he could watch all the action because he was too busy dodging the ball. There was a moment in the game where a player mishit the ball and Geiger was spinning around in circles trying to find it. What the hell are the people in charge thinking about? It looks like they put 10 referees in the VAR booth, but they only have one on the field, in all caps here. Put a referee in front of the play and a referee behind the play and not in the middle of the play.
Wow, that's bizarre.
Yeah, Bill Carroll was fired up.
I mean, I dig that outside the box thinking, though. I can't say anything he's wrong there.
Did you guys try to take advantage of the referee when you're on the field in terms of just, like, picks?
No.
I never heard of that.
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Especially now, you can't
get away
with anything.
World Cup level, so you know.
Yeah, that was what separated it. Yeah. I think the people that complain about VAR video review is that it's taking the human element out of the game. Well, that sounds like maybe too much human element to add a second person, because part of it is you want to put your trust into one person, and
they set the tone.
Yeah, their personality, the way they manage the game, there's an art form to it. So I would encourage him to maybe look back at the next or watch the next match and to understand that, you know, that's part of the beauty of the game is him dodging the ball and tracking it and finding it. And now he has support around him, but it's still supposed to be about that one singular referee, Mark Geiger in this case, his decisions, his interpretation, and his sort of perception, or he's a part of the match.
The one thing about referees that's consistently undersold is their level of athleticism. And I'm not talking about like how we would think, oh, hey, your ability to separate off the ball or whatever, but the endurance and kind of mental speed that you have to have. And it's like it's a little Wando to it too, where your positioning and your timing matters more than anything else.
I'll give it up on that, Weeby, but I'll tell you what, there is nothing in the world more awkward than a referee warm up. If you, they don't show it on the broadcast, but there are times where, you know, during our warm ups where you glance over and you're like, what are they doing?
They're perfectly in unison.
That is bizarre. It's like, you know, the like little kids that do the like boom, boom, clap thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like they've got some bizarre techniques, or you're just like, and some weird stretching routines. Yoga poses I've never seen.
Never said referees were normal people.
And sometimes they're not the most athletic-looking people, too.
Yeah, but they get the job done, and they put in an honest shift like anybody else. But, whew, those warm-ups.
Perry in Portland is rooting for Mexico okay. He says, no, it's God, county, and club. I'm pretty sure he meant country, but if you're dedicated to your county like that, I respect you. That's it. In CCL, I don't root for MLS teams. I like to see a good game, and if the MLS team wins, then good for them. Same for World Cup, good games, and whoever is playing against Mexico, I will root for. Cameron Eves, RSL and U.S. national team fan from Provo, Utah, says, hot take for you here. I believe that it's not only okay for U.S. fans to root for Mexico, but also that U.S. fans have a responsibility to root for Mexico. I don't think anybody would argue that Mexico winning the World Cup would be good for U.S. soccer. It would put North America soccer on the map, make it more relevant, and make the U.S. look better because we consistently compete with Mexico. As fans, we put our team first above everything else, even if that's a rival. If Portland winning a certain game saves Seattle from not making the playoffs, I'm sure most Seattle fans would have no problem cheering on Portland. I'm not going to pretend like you have to like it. In fact, you should probably hate it. Trust me, if the U.S. was in this World Cup, I'd be wishing all sorts of ill upon Mexico. Maybe it'd be different if Mexico had no chance of winning. But the U.S. didn't make it, and Mexico does have an outside shot. So for now, cringe, vamos Mexico.
Oh, boy.
Nah, I'm not about that. Look, I'm watching Mexico now. I'm enjoying it. I'm hoping that they have some success because it's fun. But inevitably, I think the crash is coming. Inevitably, I hope the crash is coming. Kaylin, you and I were talking about this. I definitely do not want Mexico to get past the quarterfinals. In no shape or form do I want them to have any shot at winning this tournament.
Right, so by this logic, if you're a Portland fan, you should be happy that Seattle won the title a couple years back because it reflects well on the Pacific Northwest and Cascadia.
Yeah, I don't think it works that way.
No.
I don't think it works that way. And Portland fans would also remind you that they won the first MLS Cup among Cascadia teams. And they'd be quick to remind you of that.
Yeah, I think there could be a whole other podcast on this, honestly. It is so complex. I mean, I find myself watching the Mexico-Germany match with Bakary Soumaré, and we both played for Juan Carlos Osorio, and really, you know, big fans of his, so you're rooting for him. But, you know, it's just it is really – I went and actually I don't know if I should say this, but I went and bought a Mexico jersey recently.
Oh, really?
Not for myself, but – my girlfriend's getting into the World Cup, and she's like really, I don't know, she wanted to represent for a team and chose Mexico. So I was like, but even just buying it,
I
felt.
You didn't make her buy it? You didn't like at least just give her the card so you don't have to do the transaction? It'll show up on your credit card?
That's probably true, yeah. But I feel it felt really off, felt wrong.
I can see it now. 30 for 30. It all started with a sponsorship, a tweet, and then a storm.
Yeah, this thing went crazy. Like I said, I'm enjoying Mexico. I think they're a fun team to watch. I like Juan Carlos Osorio. I don't want him to win the World Cup. Absolutely don't want
That's
him
okay,
to win
Weeby.
The World Cup.
That's so, okay.
By the way, Will Parchman put it out there. He says, in 07, Dave Sarokin was fired as the head coach of the Chicago Fire. Juan Carlos Osorio replaced him. Later that year, Bruce Arena resigned as the head coach of the New York Red Bulls. Juan Carlos Osorio replaced him. Why are we even questioning whether he's the next U.S. national team coach?
Oh, God.
JCO for the U.S. You have intimate experience with the man. Would it be a good hire?
I'm backing him. I'm backing him for the job. I think he checks a lot of the boxes that
come on
that you would want. I mean, he speaks.
Except the fact that he was Mexican. Like, all right, we can all acknowledge maybe it's okay to cheer for Mexico. No way in no shape, form, bloody hell are we hiring Mexico's former coach.
Really? If they go to the semifinal?
We do not want Mexico's recycled coach.
It's not recycled, though. Well, how is it recycled?
It's his. No, he's theirs. He's theirs.
Mexican coaches don't last more than a cycle.
He was theirs.
Much less than that.
He was theirs. Do not want
theirs. So you stayed quiet during that whole last discussion because this is your, you have vitriol.
I don't have anything intelligent to say about whether you should cheer for Mexico or not, but I do feel passionate that I don't want their former coach. He was Mexico's. He was the identity of the Mexican national team.
Not if you talk to most people in Mexico.
they hated him.
Yeah, they're
they've only started to come around.
Because he's not Mexican, because he's a foreigner, because he's been in America a lot of his life.
He has intimate knowledge of the U.S. and the system here. A lot of relationships. Same thing in Mexico. There's a whole lot of Mexican-Americans.
But he was
Mexico.
Mexico's coach.
He speaks.
I don't want to talk about his resume.
He's got a great
he could be the best coach in the world. I don't want Mexico's
matter.
Former coach.
What if he elevates U.S. soccer to another level?
Do you feel
it's
that strong?
It's not even worth that.
I would argue it's not even worth that. That let's do it on
you
art.
Would rather spite hire somebody else than see the U.S. I'm not saying Juan Carlos Osorio would guarantee get us there, but he is a good option.
But this gets to a whole other thing because – and maybe this is a different podcast too, but it was Jurgen Klinsmann ours? Like, what is that about? Like, he's Germany's.
Yeah, Germany isn't our arch rival.
I understand it's not Mexico, but I want the best coach that's going to be able to – and whether Juan Carlos is the coach or not, I'm not sure. I think he could do an excellent job.
Yeah, if we're talking Sven-Goran Eriksson, I'm not out here stumping for Sven. But I think
but you're
Juan
willing
Carlos
to
Osorio.
Stump for Juan Carlos Osorio.
I think Juan Carlos Osorio has a lot of the ingredients.
He's had like three good games in his entire career.
Okay.
I don't understand why we're so – maybe if we were so sure that this was the guy.
I don't know that there's
but
anybody
you're willing to jump –
there's nobody that we're so sure.
That's the point. So let's not take Mexico's recycled coach.
All right. Off the recycling bit right now, but yeah. Do recycle if you've listened to Bobby.
Beating the World Cup champions, that's just off the trash heap, but we'll see.
But he's theirs. I feel very strongly about this.
Mark from Orlando. I'm a longtime Orlando City fan. I want to share my thoughts on the final couple weeks with Christ coaching the team. We all saw the recent results. Beyond that, I think he lost the locker room. I was at the match in Vancouver sitting right behind the Orlando bench, and it seemed to me then that the players had already checked out. My take is that they'd lost all belief in his ability to set the team up tactically. When you bring in a core group of experienced players who played for some of the top coaches in MLS, Kleshin with Marsh, Miriam with Berhalter, Dwyer and Rossell with Vermees, you'd better be able to coach at the same level as those guys, or you'll be found out. I think this is what happened with Jason Christ. You had an interesting column you wrote about this. I don't know if it's seen the light of day.
It's out now. It is out.
What do you make of this, that tactically the players, or that he wasn't up to snuff? Jason Christ.
Yeah, the team definitely had tactical deficiencies. We talked about it on the last show. I gave my take, and I had to have it in the column. Matt gave his. And yeah, when you don't have, I mean, now, especially now more than ever, but players really hold coaches accountable. They really want to feel like the coach is putting them in a position to succeed. And if he's not, the tactics lead to losing the locker room. And I'm not going to share anything regarding that, but they definitely go hand in hand.
Can I ask, though, what does it mean to lose the locker room? From professional players, when somebody says because it's like a cliched thing to me, it sounds cliched because every locker room is different. Every situation is different. To you, what does it mean to lose a locker room? How do you lose a locker room as a head coach?
If I would say one of the key things to being a good professional player, conviction, which often comes from confidence, the feeling that it's not necessarily what you choose, it's doing it 100% and doing it well. And if I don't have the conviction to attack a ball or do my job at 100%, then I'm just going to be slow all game. And if what he's telling me I don't fully believe in, then I'm not going to get up to that 100%. So when you lose the locker room, it makes players play. The group isn't tied in as one. We know how important it is to play with one instead of 11 separate players. But as an individual, I am just not playing at the max intensity that I can.
Yeah, it's belief. It's like Bobby saying, it's just belief. If that carries over to just the mood, you know, you spend so much time together that if the head man in charge you don't believe in, that's hard. I would not speak.
None of us know what happened with Orlando City at all. This is 100% Mark from Orlando's opinion. Period.
Yeah, but I've been in that situation before where
Do you feel that creeping in as a team? Is it something that creeps in? Is it like, you know, veterans are talking, saying, what are we doing in this training session? What were we doing in this game? Where the tactics were wrong?
Kalen, how many organizations around Major League Soccer, maybe even the world, do you think have lost a coach? 50% or the lost locker room? You think it's 50% actually truly like their coach and believe in him?
I don't think you have to like your coach.
Oh, right, but believe in what he's doing. You know, quote-unquote lost the locker room. I would say it might even be as high as 50%.
Oh, that sounds really high. That sounds really high. There's always a bit of tension, of course, between player and coach, but I think as far as losing a locker room, I would expect that number to be way smaller. Like,
maybe hopefully. We have different thresholds on losing a locker room means.
I also think there's an element of, like, individual players, like, the totality of the locker room is a different thing from somebody who's not getting the time they want or doesn't feel like they've been developed in the right way or given the opportunities that they want. We'll finish here. Dane from London, he says Thursday's show on 2026 is maybe his all-time favorite. The pride, excitement, and enthusiasm in the tone of your voices when talking about the award of the Joint World Cup was lovely to hear, and it helped me share in the excitement and also feel proud. He shares in it because he's part English-American, born in London, and lived there all of his life, but he discovered ETR a couple years back, has been a regular podcast listener ever since, helps him keep on top of things across the pond. He says he's stuck in the middle of U.S. English snobbery, but he's slowly seeing a change in people's opinions over here regarding Major League Soccer. He says Sky Sports does a great job. He watches all the live shows, and this is very timely here. He also gets to see our very own Kalen Carr every now and then on Sky Sports, talking MLS issues. He says he's a Chelsea season ticket holder, been so for 25 years, will always be his first love, but he personally adores MLS. He watches as many games as he can. He loves Orlando City. He comes back. He's going to be at two more games this year and hopes to see us out there. I don't know if we'll be there, Dane, but if we are, we're going to say what's up, get you a beer, get you a t-shirt as well. Thank you so much for listening. Folks like this are the guys that we do this for, the girls, the ones that get a connection to this game, to this league, through our voices twice a week, which is, that brings me all the joy I need to do this show and to sit in a room with you guys for hours on end. I'm not saying I don't enjoy it. I'm not saying I've lost the locker room here, but I see the lack of belief in your faces. That means we're going to end it here. Thanks to Dane. Thanks to everybody who listens. World Cup still rolls on. MLS back this week, and we'll see you on Monday, everybody.